Here we go. Here come those horses, and I can't remember their names. The one closest to me, the one with the white and the brown, the spots that is.
Yeah,
that's who is that?
That's Lady Treasure.
Lady Treasure, right?
Lady Treasure,
on the other
yeah.
Side, the black with the white hoofs there.
That's, yeah, that one is called Salty Nibbles, but I wanted to change that name because I think, and I wasn't trying. You know, I am not a one-dimensional man, John. And believe you me, I wasn't trying to go dirty with this. So I wanted to change that one to Professor Nibbles. I think it sounds more G-rated.
Okay, and it's okay to change horses' names mid-stride? I know you're not allowed to get off them when you're in the water, but it's okay.
Yeah, I talked to Professor Nibbles before we started, you know, before we picked up the little lady, so...
Okay, well, ooh, speaking of the lady, they've
just
listened.
Ask me.
In the 1960s, these Midwesterners earned 5 NFL championship trophies.
I do not know.
Green Bay Packers? Huh.
You guessed it.
Teeny tiny, not a football fan, huh?
Had no idea that was coming. All righty. So Kim Potter is the police officer, 26 years old. She has resigned. She will now stand charges. She'll be charged with second-degree manslaughter in the death of Dante White when she discharged her service revolver instead of what she thought was her taser. Second-degree manslaughter. So she didn't have malicious intent. It was, an accident, but still, even as an accident, you had a chance just before you pulled the trigger not to pull the trigger. And in this case, one bullet, according to the autopsy, struck the 20-year-old in the chest. He then drove off a short distance and then crashed the car. So I don't think it comes as any great surprise that you have to charge him for something. So they're going to go with second degree of manslaughter.
Yeah, I looked it up in the Minnesota statutes. It says, "But the person's culpable negligence whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk and consciously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm to another." So I think it's this idea of negligence, culpable negligence.
Right. I remember hearing somebody say that if you took a heavy flower pot and put it on a windowsill and knowing that the pot could possibly fall out of the windowsill and then fall down and hit somebody in the head and then kill them, that would be negligence, knowing that the pot had weight, the height, the window was open, you knew it was open. If it comes out of the window, hits the person, ends up killing the person, that would be a manslaughter. That's how I remember learning about it. And the parents of the now deceased were on Good Morning America. And, of course, losing their kid, very upsetting, but they get on the news to be able to talk about it.
And Mr. Wright, how did you get word, and what did police initially tell you about the shooting, sir?
Well, I got word from my wife. She called me, and she was screaming and telling me what was going on. And I was, it was a normal day for us, and we started off as a normal day. I haven't talked much to the police at all.
They haven't given us any information.
They haven't pretty much given us any information at all.
We do know that the police chief, he said that he believes that the shooting, that the officer meant to shoot the taser, not her gun, and that it was an accidental shooting. Do you accept that explanation, Mr. Wright?
I cannot accept that. I lost my son. He's never coming back. I can't accept that a mistake. That doesn't even sound right. You know, this officer that's been on the force for 26 years. I can't accept that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
it is hard to imagine.
Yeah.
How that could have happened. We heard from a regular listener yesterday, a Mark from Port Orchard, and he suggests that the female officer had sensory overload, went into panic mode, and overreacted. She will pay the price, he says. And I think that may be you know, the only explanation you can have. Otherwise, I mean, that's the big thing. When it first happened, I said, how easy is it to confuse the taser and the gun? It sounds like it's not easy at all, and they're trained that way. They look different. They're lighter. They're colored differently. And you can see in the video that she's holding up her gun. You know, you can see it in the camera's view that it's clearly not a taser.
Okay, so then if it wasn't an accident, then it was intentional. Either something's an accident, I accidentally bumped into your car, or I intentionally bumped into your car. So now are we saying that the 26-year veteran of the police intentionally shot the kid, intentionally said the word, I'm going to tase you, taser, and then intentionally knowing that she was discharging a lethal weapon.
That's why
as opposed
it's...
to...
Go ahead.
Yeah. No. That's why it's...
Okay. That's why it's negligence. I don't think you need the intent, the intentionality of it. She clearly intended to, you know, to shoot him. Taser. It wasn't, according to her, with a taser rather than a gun. The thing is, how can you not be paying attention to what's in your hand that could, you know, that could actually kill somebody? It makes sense if you go into some kind of panic mode, like Mark suggests, that it was the sensory overload, and that's the kind of thing you try to mitigate when you're in training. The weird thing is she was doing field training with the guy that she was with, which raised the other question. Mm-hmm. Mark asks, how did the guy get loose in the first place? I'm wondering. I don't know enough about this guy's name, Lucky, that she was training. Maybe he is, you know, relatively new to the force and did not do a good job of handcuffing him, and so the guy realized, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I'm going to get in the car and not let myself be handcuffed. I don't know, but I'm wondering if the training component was part of what got in the way of her decision making.
Right, and this guy's pretty big. Mr. White was fairly slender and small compared to the cop that had his hands on him. And whether or not he was going to press him, grab him, pull him down or whatever, the fact that he was scrambling to get back in his car to get away like he did back in June, it was going to be the same move again for Mr. White. He didn't want to go to jail. He had $100,000 bail that he walked on. They had the warrant out for him for
gross misdemeanor.
I don't know, because he was arrested in February 2019 for armed assault and robbery, stole $810 from somebody and used a pistol during that case.
Okay, but that case had been settled. That wasn't what the warrant was for. The warrant was for, there was a report he was in a car with other people, and somebody reported that he had the gun out, waving the gun. They made the call to that. He was sitting in the back seat. He left the gun and ran away. That's what the warrant was for his arrest. Not for the other thing, because the other thing, apparently, that had been resolved.
He found out he has a permit. He doesn't have a permit. He's waving the gun around. Then the police go to get him, and he takes off. Okay.
Yes.
Let's see. His
mother. He called me, and he said, Mom, I've just been pulled over. I said, for what? They said they pulled me over because I had air fresheners hanging in the rearview mirror. I said, okay, we'll take them down. And then the police officers came back up to the window and asked Dante to step out of the car. And Dante said, for what? Am I in trouble? And the officer said, we're going to explain that when you step out of the car. And they asked him to put the phone down. And I heard the phone getting put down pretty hard, whether it was on the floor. I don't know where he put the phone down. Mm-hmm. And then I heard scuffling and the girl that was with him screaming. And I heard an officer ask for them to hang up the phone, and then I didn't hear anything else. Mm-hmm. I tried to call back three, four times, and then the girl that was with him answered the phone, and she said that they shot him. And then after that, this is the last time I seen my son. I haven't seen him since.
Oh, hard. Breaking for that mom. The 20-year-old leaves a 2-year-old behind, and Mr. I think Crump comes in. Ben Crump, who is he's made quite a career out of this. He goes in there and sue cities for this type of thing. I think he represented George Floyd. He's going to represent this kid. I think he might have done Trayvon Martin as well. And he will step in. And in this case, they'll get a lot of money because that obviously a mistake made with Sheech fires the weapon instead of the taser. And in that case, the city most likely writes another big, or the state or the city or the county, whoever, wherever the insurance policy comes out of it, another great big check will go out. And that guy will take 40% of it. So the question is there were riots last night, and do we hear from our elected officials in order to be able to wait for all the facts to come in? Or
before we get started, I do want to address the killing of Dante Wright. He should be alive today. And to his family and loved ones, you must know that the president and I grieve with you as the nation grieves his loss. And we stand with you. Our nation needs justice and healing. And law enforcement must be held to the highest standards of accountability. At the same time, we know that folks will keep dying if we don't fully address racial injustice and inequities in our country, from implicit bias to broken systems.
Is the last part of that sentence attributed to the 20-year-old breaking away from the police officers, trying to arrest him for an outstanding warrant, and then getting in the car resisting arrest? Is that the implicit bias and the injustice that racial minorities are suffering? Is she making that connection?
Well,
is
I think it's
sweeping this all under one, or this is an opportunity for her to continue to do more race baiting like she likes to do?
I don't consider it race baiting. That she considers race a serious issue in this country, as do a lot of Americans. What I think she's doing there is to it rhetorically, she's not saying this, you know, what happened in example A is an example of a B, but she's putting them next to each other. So it could be, we'll have to see if that's what happens. But it did, you know, it did remind me, Sue Rahr talked about when she was a young officer, they used to pull over black kids in a car more readily than white kids, because they figured there was a better chance that whoever the black kids were hanging out with had more criminal records, and they could score bigger on that. And she acknowledged that that was in effect and never occurred to her at the time, that was kind of a racist impulse. The fact that we are going after people for expired tabs rather than, you know, sending them a bill in effect, is mm-hmm. you have to ask, would they have stopped somebody who's white with expired tabs? And maybe they would have, but the danger is these kinds of confrontations end up with dead people. And is
yeah,
it
when
worth
you resist
it
arrest,
for expired
that's
tabs?
Right. When you resist arrest, when you resist
yes.
arrest.
But
yeah.
is it worth resisting?
When you resist arrest, when you
yes.
resist arrest,
yeah.
Tom, I've got pulled over for expired tabs numerous times.
Yes.
Okay. Cop comes up, says driver's license, registration, proof of insurance.
Okay.
They run my driver's license. I don't have any outstanding warrants. So then
yes.
he comes up to me and he goes, "You know what the you know what the fine is for this?" I said, "No." He's like, $375. I said, "Okay, what do I need to do?" He said, "I'll give you one day to get the tabs, and then you need to show proof down at the courthouse there in Issaquah."
Yeah.
If he had run my license, I get out of the car. I have an outstanding warrant for whatever it is. It's a law.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cop goes to arrest me because I have an outstanding warrant, a bench
yes.
warrant, and they're allowed to arrest me. I
yes.
then at that point begin to pull away from the police officer
yes.
and run around. Or
yes.
I reach back into my car or something. And the cop at this point doesn't know whether I have a gun, although possibly when he did run my license, he had seen that there were charges where I had actually used a gun to commit
yes.
a crime to steal money from someone. Do you think that cop, when I reach into my car, he's going to give me the benefit of the doubt depending on the color of my skin, or does he want to go home to his wife and kids? If you resist arrest, you have now changed the entire dynamics of the environment and has nothing to do with the color of the person's skin. And the fact that the vice president wants to connect. Maybe she, rhetorically, she's just sort of saying one thing, pause, mm-hmm. new paragraph, we need to address this. She's not. She's including it all in so that everyone yes. can then go, oh, I see. So this is yeah. another example of racist systems. No, this is another example of someone that is resisting arrest.
That's right.
And something bad happens.
You have
George
the right.
Floyd resisted arrest in 2019.
Right.
He swallowed drugs to go to the hospital rather than to the police.
That's right.
2020, he does
life.
The exact same thing again. Not worth. No, Tom. What is not worth his life? The $20 bill is not worth his life. That's not where the
yes.
problem came. The problem came when George Floyd decided he did not want to get into that car.
Yep.
That is when the problem started.
But
same thing with this kid. The
fine.
Same thing. The crime is irrelevant. The problem begins when the police go to arrest you and you decide you want to fight them or
that's
you
right.
want to run away.
Yes.
That's where the game changes. And that's
exactly,
not color of skin.
It right. shouldn't cost. I'm not saying it's the color of skin. If a white guy did the same thing, the thing is, you have to ask yourself, as a justice system, is it worth shooting, killing somebody because they're resisting arrest if it's for a gross misdemeanor warrant? That's the issue that's at hand.
That was an act. In this case, that's an accident. She went to tase him.
Okay.
What she should have done is she should have grabbed him. That other guy should have pulled him out of the car, right?
Okay.
That's what they should have done, and then
but
got him onto the ground.
Him.
But God forbid they do something like that. Right. This is an accident. How about a year ago,
okay.
she's a police officer.
We
she's
don't
in
need
fourth
to go
grade
to
class teaching the kids
examples.
About school, and she discharges the weapon and shoots the kid in the face while in a classroom. That's an accident as well. You want
well,
to avoid this stuff? You can name them
it?
All. You can name them all. If you resist arrest, things change. It gets bad fast, and
I agree.
Possibly get killed.
It
yep.
would have been. Listen,
and it has
he
nothing
contributed
to do,
but his
with
death
race.
Should not be a result of that resistance. I mean, if this was an armed, you know, robbery or something, but in this case, it was for a warrant for a gross misdemeanor. That is
right.
not
yep.
worthy of shooting somebody to
yeah.
death.
You know what you shouldn't have done? You shouldn't have tried to get back in the
that's
car and
take that's true.
Take
there
off.
Are two shouldn'ts, sir. I agree.
That's
one
the problem.
Had deadlier
that's
consequences.
The problem. Absolutely. You know what? When they go to arrest you, don't fight them. Go in, do the time.
Well, interestingly enough, right. look at what happened to the guy who was in the military, even wearing a lieutenant in the military, and he got pepper sprayed because he didn't follow the
right.
people's orders. The question is, if you resist those orders,
and he
do
had a
you
gun
deserve...
In the car.
What the
and he
soldier?
Had a gun in the car. Yeah,
I don't. Mm-hmm. We don't know that. The soldier
oh, yeah, you do.
Said, "Why are you? Well, why are you doing this to
read
me?"
Read about it.
And it's because the cops don't like it when people don't follow their orders. But the question is, to what degree
nervous,
can are you allowed to do something?
Car.
He got fired for shooting the guy in the pepper sprayed in the face.
Yep.
He was fired,
yep.
so that apparently he wasn't supposed to be able to do that.
He wasn't the right color. All right, right back. Here's Tracy Taylor. All righty now. He was supposed to do 150 years. They put him in for 150. He did 12, and then the good Lord brought him home. I wonder if he was Bernie Madoff. Did he convert to Catholicism? Because if you confess your sins or say that you're sorry, like right up to the last moment, I think St. Peter gives you a pass. Bernie Madoff took clients for millions and millions and millions of dollars. It was a classic mm-hmm. Ponzi scheme. Although the reason Bernie was able to do it for as long as Bernie did is Charles Ponzi, who set this thing up back in the 1920s in Italy, only did it for 1 year. Other people were doing this type of stuff. But originally, Mr. Ponzi was giving people 50% if you wanted it in like 60 days or 30 days. But if you wanted a return of 100% on your investment, you had to wait 90 days. It all worked for Charles Ponzi until he ran out of people because he would just take
sure.
your money, right, hold on to it, and then pay the person in front. This was also very similar to a situation that was happening like 20 years ago. It was called Airplane, and it was that you gave $10,000 to get into the airplane, the imaginary airplane, and then you'd keep moving up until you were the pilot. Do you remember this sort of thing that was going on? And then
no,
all of a sudden you had to find like seven people behind you that would also give money that would move you up. Do you remember this thing? Or,
yeah.
or it was also known as birthday party, where you went to a birthday party, gave $1,000 or $5,000, then you had to throw a party, and everybody was just waiting. It only fell apart when you couldn't get additional people to come to your party, right. And then you were out all of that money.
I can only relate to it as a kid when you had those chain letters. And okay. The idea is you write a letter and then you get 10 people and you send it to whoever the person on top of that list is. And I thought, oh, that always sounds so cool. Then it never transpired. By the time you got to like the third or fourth person, they couldn't find 10 more people. And so you never got these letters from all around the world. I don't run in the high finance world that you do, John, so I can only relate it to chain letters.
I did not. I was very close to getting in one of those airplanes, but the guy said to me, you got to make sure you pick 10 good people, because if you pick like one of them that bails, then the whole thing falls apart. That's the plane goes down. So you got to make sure you get really, really good people. Yeah. But it seems to work. It would work for people that gave money to Bernie Madoff, and there were so many celebrities that gave money to Bernie Madoff. So many of them. Kevin Bacon.
His wife.
Millions. They used Bernie like a bank. Right. They used Bernie like a bank, and then he wiped people out.
Yeah. So this guy, he really infuriates me, and I'm sympathetic. In fact, we brought Kevin Bacon, who was a guest of the film festival a few years ago, and he was on our show, and I'm very sympathetic to guys like him who, I mean, they literally lost millions. But to me, the people that I'm most concerned about, because Kevin Bacon still has a way to cash in on his celebrity and talent to make more money. But there are so many of these small-time investors, people that put all of their retirement funds in Bernie Madoff's hands, their pension schemes that were completely wiped out. Imagine you socking away your money for like the last 20 years of your career, so you have this comfortable retirement, and then just find out you have zero, and it's all Bernie Madoff's doing. It's so infuriating. And the problem is, what can you do? Once he got caught, they can put him in prison. Well, he didn't go to prison until he was 70, so he lived most of his life, and then so for 12 years he was deprived of his freedom, whereas the people that he hurt for the rest of their lives, they're going to be dealing with the impact of what he did. Right. And it's like there wasn't enough justice. It's like, yeah, he got caught, but it's like, oh, I really find it infuriating.
Well, they can't ever be made whole, right?
Yes.
150 years was more symbolic than anything. It was in 2009. They took all of his assets that he had, and they auctioned them all off. He had a bunch of, like, classic watches that went, and I guess some people got some money back, but mostly everybody ended up falling victim to a $20 billion Ponzi scheme. Probably in the beginning, he thought, well, this works. You know, this is going okay. His family said he was a soft-spoken man who felt guilty for the rest of his life. And, you know, sure, guilt is, I guess he carries that with him, but everybody that lost everything.
Yeah. I hate being vindictive because I'm pretty merciful guy, but the only payment I think that he really felt, like he says, oh, I really feel bad. I screwed over so many of my family and friends. But the only sense of remorse that you ever got from him was about his sons. And it is horrible that it cost him his son's lives. But he had one son, Mark, who killed himself, committed suicide on the second anniversary of his father's arrest. And if you don't think there's any connection, I think you're fooling yourself, that this son was so ashamed because he took part in his dad's scheme that he killed himself. And then his other brother died 4 years after that at the age of 48. So he had two sons. One killed himself at 46. The other died at 48. And he says that's what haunted him. And I go, that is horrible that it took the death of your two sons to actually make you feel something. But even then, he wrote about this. The thing that haunts him the most, he says, is that they never forgave me for betraying their love and trust, that he really, that he's really hurt, that they could not find it possible to forgive me. It's still about him. It's like, why couldn't they forgive me? How dare you? You know, that's your kids are dead and you're concerned that they didn't forgive you before they died. I find this man contemptible.
You really do. I was going to ask you to cast a movie with him in it, Tom, but I think you're too now.
Robert De Niro already played him in a well-received cable movie, I think. So
what hasn't Robert De Niro played?
Yeah, that's right.
The Justice Department got $14 billion back as of March of the year, and then $13 billion was also returned to Madoff's victims. In addition, the Securities Investors Protection Cooperation provided $600 million in insurance to the victims, certainly not of the $80 billion or whatever it was that was taken altogether. But it's one of these things where, you know, people that are traveling in these circles, do you have somebody? Oh, I got a great guy. Who's that?
Exactly.
Bernie will take care of you. But everybody does. I mean, I people say to me, who do you use? Oh, I use Sally.
Sure.
What do you like about Sally? Oh, she's great. She'll, and I trust her emphatically. And I got her name from a friend of mine. And he said, oh, it worked out great. I've retired early. So I gave her. So I've given her name to a whole bunch of. And you just trust that that person is always going to be there with your money. So
apparently, do you know who Carl Shapiro is? I didn't know him, but he's a billionaire philanthropist who was one of Madoff's first and earliest clients. And so many people said, well, hell, if Carl signs off on him, of course. And that, if you can get one big fish, you can bring everybody in the trail of that fish, you know, into your scheme and get away with it for the most part.
During the commercial break, I called a friend of mine because I thought, I remember talking to somebody, and I called and I said, hey, don't you know somebody who lost money to Bernie Madoff?
Mm.
And she said, yeah. And I said, who was it? Quick, I get it back on the air. And she's like, I'm not telling you. I said, oh, come on, you know the person. Who is it? Tell me who it is. Why people don't tell me things? Why?
Because you don't know how to keep a secret, John. Anybody who knows you well knows you should never confide in you anything unless you want it blabbed on the air.
Right. Plus, you can hear the panic in my voice because I have to get back on the radio. Right. Why do I so desperately need this name? Because I've got to go on the radio and use it, right?
Yeah.
It's like my brother-in-law. So, let me get this straight. So, you worked for the company that was Donald Trump's accountant?
Yeah.
And so, you saw his returns?
Yeah.
God. Oh, my God. Alex, give me something.
Just give me a little thing.
Just give me a little thing. No. I'm your brother-in-law. Bang, hangs up.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody.
We know you too well.
Do you want it on the radio? Boy, let's get Tom getting mad again at Bernie Madoff. Wow. You have such contempt for him.
Yeah.
But you know, can I say something in defense of his character?
Sure.
I can't.
Tracy expect nothing less from you, John.
I knew you'd take the bait, Tracy. Letters are still pouring in. All right. Give me your three favorite notes from the mailman, if you can do that, Sean.
It's always from the beginning, it seems.
Conveniently.
Yeah, I'm not going to the back end to get it. I'm going lazy.
I was going to ask Mr. What's his name? Professor Pickles or whatever the thing's named.
Professor Nibbles.
Nibbles, right.
I'm Hispanic.
No, that's not teeny tiny. Okay, I don't know where she is. Why is she not around when we go to do this? This is her big part. Let's get to the letter of the day, but first let's take care of all the rest, Tom. Here we go.
Okay, we'll start with the drug laws business we were talking about at the very beginning of the show with Hannah. Area code 206. Why can't they bust them for public intoxication? I thought drugs, although legal, were not supposed to be used in public, similar to alcohol.
Look at Mr. Smarty Pants coming up with that one, huh? I can't get the next letter up. Hold on. Oh, here it is. Okay, I got it. There it is. Okay, John, 425. John, please tell Tom that many drug dealers take a guilty plea deal to accept a possession charge versus deal. So the criminals released can be worse than just moms with joints and purses. Wow.
Well, that'd be interesting if they pleaded it down and then they're getting out. Area code 206. Something that you're forgetting with legalizing the harder drugs, you're just rewarding the illegal manufacturing and large-scale drug dealing that goes on in the black market and outside of our country. How are you going to address that? This is insane thinking. Treatment is an absolute must. It is the only answer.
Agree, agree. Media survey, Mark from Port Orchard. Tom, started out in 1969 as an investigative reporter. I wound up as a criminal investigator. Just the facts, ma'am, is a good standard for both. The great public does not need to be told what to think, contrary to elitist thoughts.
Very good. And on Jeopardy, Joel in the 206, Curly for Jeopardy host? That's a slam dunk.
No, I can't pronounce names. 206, LeVar Bort. Burton for Jeopardy host.
Or Ben Stein at 425. Ben Stein for Jeopardy host.
That'd be good. COVID weddings, 425. We had a fantastic COVID wedding. It saved us so much money just to have it at home.
Area code 206. The sister's gig is up on Drive Time Radio. Way to go, bro.
Okay, and Matt and Ballard says, solution destination wedding. We went to Mexico to get married a decade ago. Ended up inviting over 100 people. Only 15, including family, made the trip. They can't be mad at us for not inviting them.
That's funny. Paige and I did the same thing. We got married in Paris, her sister said, well, that's one way to weed out the riffraff.
That's on right.
Vaccines issue, area code 360. Give blood. They test for the COVID antibodies, and you're doing something good for the community. Hear, hear.
That's a good idea. I should do that. Nick from Orcas. Oh, great. Now I guess I won't get my John Curley autographed syringe.
Dee Dee in Renton. Hello, Tom and Curly. I had an unusual virus in January 2020. So yesterday I took the COVID antibody test at my pharmacist. My results were negative. It was late in the day, and my pharmacist had a vaccine left over that they offered to me. I accepted and took my first COVID vaccine. That said, I may have had COVID in January 2020, but the antibodies possibly wouldn't show up in a test now. That's right. The antibodies, we don't know how long they last. Good point.
Doug's shed at 253. Hello, my suggestion to you and Doug is to take the shed apart. No, it'll be lighter and not as much carrying all at once. It's heavy. Good luck. Lift it with your legs. Don't drop it and make certain you really, really need that heavy shed. Teeny, teeny.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
The letter of the day comes from an old standby, Hugh in Raymond. Mice and Men? I've heard of that book. Is it about John living in his cabin?
Tell me again, George. Tell me about the rabbits.
Tell me the rabbits. Should be of Mice and Man.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
Tom, she's going to spit fire about Bernie Madoff again.
Let's do this again. Here we go. An hour's worth.